quite
unusual.
Hello, and welcome to the Quite Unusual podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Noelle.
And I'm Nicole.
And we are here today to talk to you about some spooky October stuff.
Ooh.
Sort of like where fantasy and true crime meet, if you will.
Yeah, for sure.
This sort of kicks off like our spooky Halloween topics, which we're supposed to honestly start earlier in the month, but Skinwalker took forever.
Yeah, that took up like a whole huge part of our lives for just a little bit.
Yeah, like we were Skinwalkers for a minute.
Yeah.
But we're starting now, and I think that this topic is honestly a really, really great place to start.
Yes.
Today, we are going to talk about a sweet little baby boy named Rod Farrell, who identifies as a vampire. We're going to talk about his vampire clan and a little field trip they took, which resulted in a double homicide.
I like how you referred to him as a sweet baby boy.
Sweet baby boy.
He's not sweet.
No, he's a fucking turbo douche dick.
He's a bag of dicks.
He is a fucking swollen bag of dicks.
I remember seeing something about this case when it like first happened.
Oh, yeah?
Even though I guess maybe not when it first happened because it was we were really young. Yeah, we were really young, but I must have seen it on something because I remember seeing Rod in his orange jumpsuit with his long black hair and he's like sticking his tongue out like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I don't know why that image is like burned in my brain. Probably because it's a little disturbing and the fact that he just seems like he doesn't give a shit that he was on trial for a double murder.
Oh, we are so going to get into how he does not give a single shit later.
Zero shits.
But I want to also just, for one second, talk about a made-for-TV movie.
Yes.
Called Vampire Clan.
Yes.
The introduction for the movie is, "The story that follows is about a group of Kentucky teenagers for whom vampire fantasies ended in a ride to hell." And I was hooked. I was instantly hooked.
Yeah, I mean, that's just great right there.
It opens with a scene of dead people, the victims, like 4 seconds in. A weird like confession and then this amazing quote about the ride to hell. And then it introduces the movie.
Yeah.
And it feels very disrespectful to be like, here's a dead man.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I got through about 45 minutes of this movie today when I was working from home.
Yeah.
Just turned it on. It was like background noise. I couldn't even watch it as background noise. That's how terrible it was.
It's very not good. And
it's very bad.
And the copy that I found, it's on YouTube and it's like, maybe it's recorded with a camera, like, pointing at a television.
Probably.
It's terrible. And you can see, like, remember when VHSs had, like, the traction to them?
Yes.
Where, like, the screen would go back and forth?
Yes.
It was full of that. So it's a juicy, juicy piece of nostalgia.
Well, if anyone wants to watch it, it's on IMDb for free. And I just watched it from Amazon Prime.
Oh, nice.
And it just, yeah. So you can watch it for free with a couple ads if you really want to. But you don't really want to.
You might want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, through the whole thing, our sweet little baby boy, Rod, absolutely looks like he does not give a fucking shit about anything that he's done. And he just has, like, one of those fucking faces that you want to hit.
Yeah. Oh, I know, right? He's, okay, so he's, like, this pretty bitch boy actor who they put black eyeliner on and dyed his hair black to like to make him look goth.
Yeah,
he looks nothing like Rod.
No.
And actually, if there are any Charmed fans out there, the actor who plays Rod is the same actor who plays Leo and Piper's son Chris from Charmed.
I have never seen Charmed.
Well,
but
Chris is in
you.
It. Okay. Chris is Rod in this movie.
Well, the real Rod looks like a drowned sewer rat.
Yeah.
And he's ugly and I hate his face. So if you couldn't tell, we are going to be very, very mean to this boy through this entire...
We make fun of serial killers. It's what we do.
Look, if you don't want us to bully you, don't fucking kill people.
Don't kill people and we won't make fun of you.
Yeah. It's that easy.
Simple as that. All right, so before we get into the vampire stuff and the cult stuff and the double murder stuff,
yeah,
do you want to talk about Rod and his early life?
I would love to.
All right, let's get into Roderick Justin Farrell.
Roderick.
Roderick.
The name Rod reminds me of The Simpsons because, one, everything reminds me of The Simpsons. And two, that was one of Ned Flanders' son's name was Rod.
It reminds me of Andy Samberg in Hot Rod.
Oh, Hot Rod.
Yeah.
It's a cinematic masterpiece.
Classic. Okay, so Rod was born March 28th, 1980, to teenage parents in Murray, Kentucky. Rod's mother, Sandra Gibson, was a single mother, and since Rod's father abandoned Rod and his mother soon after Rod's birth to go join the army, he wanted absolutely nothing to do with Rod and Sandra.
That's so mean.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. In the beginning, Sandra, being only a teenager herself, raised Rod with the help of her two parents, Rosetta and Harold Gibson.
Oh, those are such old-timey names.
I know, right? Rod's grandfather, Harold, his job made the family move between Murray, Kentucky and Florida all the time. So growing up, Rod sort of kind of lived in both places, and he actually had friends in both Kentucky and Florida.
Wow, that is just a dream life.
When Rod was just 2 years old, and after the family moved from Kentucky to Florida, Rod's mother, Sandra, claimed that he had developed a case of encephalitis. Encephalitis, for those who don't know, is an inflammation of the brain, usually caused by a viral infection.
Yikes.
Severe cases of encephalitis can cause mental disabilities and can cause personality changes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this is especially harmful in small children like Rod at the time. Now, it isn't confirmed that he actually, in fact, had this. Sandra actually claimed that he had a case when he was two, and it caused him to have seizures. It was actually brought up in court because his defense tried to use it as a way to push the blame, to try to go, you know, the insanity route, claiming that this caused him to develop schizophrenia as an adult, which then led him to develop these fantasies and kind of blur reality, because some doctors believe encephalitis in young children can lead to that.
We'll talk more about his court case towards the end of this, but I do want to bring up really quickly that if you do have like a frontal lobe damage, not like lobotomy style where it just destroys your frontal lobe, but like if your frontal lobe gets damaged in any sort of way, mild to moderate, you're likely to be a serial killer.
Yeah, head injuries. You've never known that?
No, I did, but I'm saying that that's like maybe there's something to this. If he had encephalitis and his brain was super swollen and he, you know, bumped his head like a two-year-old would.
Right. But we don't know if he actually had it. That's the whole thing.
That's true.
The prosecution did not find any evidence that this was true. But like Noelle said, we'll get more into the trial later. So I guess we don't really know if he actually had it or not. So
yeah,
it is what it is. In 1985, Rod, Sandra, and his grandparents made their way back to Kentucky. When Rod was just 5 years old, he said that his grandfather Harold sexually abused him on a fishing trip, but no criminal charges were ever pursued, so the credibility of this accusation is foggy as well. However, Rod's aunt has actually come out and made similar allegations against her father.
Oh, yeah.
She claims that he abused her when she was a teenager as well, so there might be some truth to that claim, but like I said, we don't know for sure. He was never arrested or anything, and if Rod at the time had said anything to his mom, who knows if she even did anything about it. I mean, at that point, she was very young herself, and she relied heavily on her parents' support, so even if she did know, would she even be able to do anything about it?
That's so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, to just rely on your parents so much so that you overlook your child being sexually assaulted.
Right.
Which you can put a lot of blame on her for that, but you also have to think she is a baby herself.
Yeah, she's a child.
Under 18 years old and probably has absolutely nothing to her name except for this child.
Exactly. Rod has also made the claim that as a child, he also witnessed his grandfather participating in Black Mass, which is a satanic ceremony that sort of inverts Catholic Mass, so it basically desecrates and mocks Catholic Mass. He also claims that he witnessed other satanic rituals and cult-like activities, such as human sacrifice and child molestation. But this, too, has never been confirmed, and no one knows if Rod actually experienced that or if he's just lying out of his ass.
He does seem like a liar to me, just in general.
Yeah.
But I will say that I always, at first, like, I always at first believe victims. The victim.
Yeah.
So I think you have to.
Right.
And also, one quick question here.
Mm-hmm.
What is a desecration of Catholic Mass, specifically?
So I read that they would break into churches.
Oh, and like eat all like the little wafer
cookies? Well, yeah, they would steal the wafers and desecrate them. Oreos? No, they would like fuck with them, like in their, they would use them in their ceremonies.
Oh.
But obviously that's like a desecration of the body of Christ, because that's what it represents. So they would just kind of do that. Actually, I read that in some cases that's why like security guards are in churches and stuff. Really? I haven't been to church in years, but I have never seen that. But yeah, basically they would break into churches, steal some shit, maybe vandalize, desecrate. And the whole ceremony is just like a mocking of Catholic Mass.
Well, that's not as fun as I thought it was. I thought they like replaced like the body of Christ with Oreos and like the wine with like milk or something. And the priest gets in there and he's like, what? What's going on here? So that just seems like way more fun.
That does seem way more fun.
You know what? Let's start a church where we just do that.
The Church of Quite Unusual.
Yeah.
I'm down for it. By this time, Rod was a child with a very active imagination. He loved fantasy, he loved horror, and he loved monsters, so Sandra, being the great mother that she was, introduced him to a game called Dungeons & Dragons.
What? Never heard of it.
Which Noelle and I actually play.
We play the shit out of it!
Give us a brief description of your character, Noelle.
Oh, no. Okay, so I am a gnome rogue, and my name is Mindry, and I'm very small, and I have a southern accent. And I'm a very angry lady.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a description of your character, Nicole.
My character is a half-elf witch who is deciding if she wants to choose the dark side or the light side. Spoiler alert, I think she's going to choose the dark side.
Spoiler!
But yeah, she also is very angry and just kind of hates people.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I feel like our characters are kind of us.
They kind of are. It's like an extension of ourselves.
Oh, wow. We should talk to our therapist about that.
Growing up, Rod had two best friends in Kentucky named Matt Goodman and Scott Anderson. And together, the three of them could be found LARPing different games that they had created in the woods behind their house. For Rod, these games were kind of a way for him to escape his not-so-great life at home. He would enter into these fantasy scenarios, and it would help him forget about all of the troubles that he had at home. See, right around this time, his mother was in her early 20s, and like any person in their early 20s, she loved to go out and party and would often leave Rod at home alone with his grandparents.
Oh, but that's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, especially if the grandpa's doing what Rod is saying that he's doing.
For sure. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. I also read that Rod and Sandra actually bounced around homes a lot. So they'd be living at her parents' house. They'd be living in public housing. She was known to have a lot of boyfriends. So the stability around their home life really wasn't there.
Yeah, sounds non-existent.
Yeah, Sandra also worked as an exotic dancer and a sex worker. And she was known to abuse drugs and alcohol.
Oh, poor Sandra. I feel so bad for her.
Yeah, it's not great.
No.
In 1991, a new kind of role-playing type of a game was released called Vampire the Masquerade.
You're saying it wrong.
What is it?
Vampire the Masquerade!
I was like, are you kidding me? I did all this research and I didn't know. All right, well, if that title comes up again, I'm just going to stop and let you cut in, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so this game was a lot like D&D, kind of in the sense that it was a role-playing and fantasy game, but with a little gothic twist and some vampire mythology and occult stuff thrown in. Sandra, who was super into vampires and the occult, purchased the game and started to play it with Rod. Rod actually became obsessed with this game and with the vampire lifestyle in general. Rod was also around 11 at this time, just to put an age on it. Sandra and Rod bonded over their love of vampires and over the game and movies such as Dracula, which she showed him. Let's just say Sandra was not your typical mother. And I'm not saying that because they bonded over vampires or because she was into spooky shit, because, hey, that's probably going to be me as a mom, so can't judge. But I say that because the two of them had a very odd relationship. She acted more like a friend than a parent to Rod. They would walk around town, around the neighborhood, holding hands, and neighbors got the impression that they were a couple rather than a mother and a son, which is super creepy.
That's big yikes.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being like a goth bomb or like being of that. And also, I feel like we were a little bit judgy earlier, but I just want to put this out there. We do not judge anyone that identifies as a vampire or a vampire.
No, not at all.
It's pretty fucking metal.
Yeah.
Just don't kill people and we're cool.
Just don't kill anyone.
So I just had to put that out there.
So Sandra and Rod were very close in age, but the way that she acted towards him in public was just kind of off. He's never come out and said that she's been inappropriate towards him, but at the age of 34, she was actually caught trying to solicit a 14-year-old boy for sex in a vampire initiation rite and wrote him pretty disturbing love letters.
Oh.
I actually have a little bit of that, if I can just read it for you.
Please read it for me now, and please do it in her voice.
I don't know what her voice is. You're the voice girl.
No, come on. Just do like a slight southern accent. Pretend like you're like Florida, Kentucky, goth pedophile is the vibe you're going for.
Okay, wow. This is a tough one. I'm going to try my best. I long to be near you for your embrace. Yes, to become a vampire, a part of the family. Immortal and truly yours. I only hope that one day you will once again return to Murray. You will then come for me and cross me over, and I will be your bride for eternity and you my sire. How was that?
Incredible. I was transported into Sandra's little pedophilic mind.
Gross.
That was amazing.
Okay, yeah. So let's just say Sandra wasn't all there. Upstairs.
Okay. When I was doing research for this, I saw that she went to court over this.
Did she?
She did. So the boy's parents, he told his parents.
Of course.
He's like, this adult woman's trying to bang me. they called the cops, took her to court. She was on probation for like 18 months or something.
Whoa.
She didn't get sentenced to anything more than probation.
Mm-hmm.
But they also got like a restraining order against her.
Yeah, I would.
So yeah, pretty safe bet there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just before Rod turned 15, Sandra had met her second husband named Darren Vriven. He was a drug dealer and a Satanist, and Rod and Sandra moved back to Florida from Kentucky to go live with him. So another one of these back and forth situations.
Yeah, what's this with poor, the Florida and Kentucky situation?
I don't know.
So weird.
At the time, Rod was doing pretty well, actually, given his upbringing and current situation. But with the arrival of Darren came a darkness for Rod. Rod and Darren did not get along. Darren was physically and emotionally abusive to Rod. Rod was 14 at the time, and Darren would provide Rod with drugs and alcohol. And Rod started to get more and more depressed and more obsessed with Vampire the Masquerade. While living in Eustis, Florida with his mom and Darren, Rod's grades started to drop and he started to dress in all black and he was starting to get in some really dark occult stuff. He started to blur the lines of reality with the game.
Oh my God.
The game is a role-playing game, but to Rod, it sort of became his reality in a sense.
That's terribly sad.
Rod then meets Janine LeClaire and Heather Wendorf at school. He introduces them to this game and actually kind of the darker side of life, and they're like all in. They sort of looked up to him when it came to all things that had to do with the occult and vampires, and they kind of looked to him as their leader.
Oh, yeah.
It also helped that Rod was able to provide them with drugs and alcohol because of Darren.
Oh, yeah. No, you'll make friends super fast in Florida if you have access to meth. I promise that.
Super fast. Mm-hmm. Sandra actually claims that she once walked in on Rod, Janine LeClaire, and another boy in Rod's room sitting around an altar. She found blood smeared all around, and she had discovered that Rod had cut himself with razor blades and had Janine and the other boy drink from him in a crossing over ritual. So she confronts Rod about this, and Rod is just like, it's fine. We were just playing Vampire the Masquerade. And he claims that his friends had just wanted him to make them into vampires. And so that was the whole blood thing and them drinking his blood.
Yeah, we never drink each other's blood when we play Dungeons and Dragons.
We have not once
no one's drank each other's blood. Even ever brought it up.
No. So at this point, even Sandra is a little freaked out by her son's actions, which tells you a lot.
Yeah. I'm sure she doesn't scare easily.
In 1995, Rod was kicked out of Eustace High School, and he and his family, so Sandra, Darren, and his grandparents, they all moved back to Murray, Kentucky. Rod goes back to school in Murray, and Sandra and Darren actually moved to Michigan, and they leave Rod behind in Kentucky with his grandparents. Darren even went as far as to tell Rod that he would never see his mother again and that he just needed to deal with it. And that's when things started to get even more sinister for Rod.
That's right. Step out from the shadows and enter the Vampire Clan. Or, if you will, the Clan of the Vampire. So Rod is like 15 at this time, mm-hmm. right? And actually, from what I saw, his mom divorced Darren after finding out that he had said that to Rod.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and then she moved back to Murray to be with her son and, like, her parents again.
Oh, well, good for her. Fuck Darren.
Yeah, dude, fuck Darren. He's disgusting. Give a baby meth. What's wrong with you? I don't know if he did that. I just assume.
I'm sure he did.
Okay, so remember Scott from before?
Yes.
Okay, well, Scott and Rod pick right back up where they left off. Mm. Scott says that he remembers when Rod came back from Florida, that he had this swagger about him. Like, he was tougher and almost more, like, violent in nature. Scott said that he, quote, looked like a guy who could kill someone.
After he came back from Florida?
Yeah. Which he said that in, like, a recent interview. So it's like, well, you kind of ruined the foreshadowing there. But.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So Rod is also very, very deep into the occult at this time. He describes himself as the following. Everything I was listening
whoa,
to...
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You're going to make me do Sandra's voice and you're not going to do Rod's voice.
God, what is... He kind of just sounds like Nicolas Cage. I don't know how to do that. He
sounds like a vampire.
No, he doesn't.
He does.
Okay. Are we going like classic vampire here?
Like...
Everything I was listening to.
Do like Brad Pitt in Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, okay. So just like sultry?
Yeah.
Okay. Everything I was listening to, it was dark. It was based upon hate, war, death, pain. That's all my music. All my movies that I watched. My bedroom, it was an array of the darker side of the occult, such as the Necronomicon, the Satanic Bible. I had upside-down crosses. Yeah, who cares? I had broken shards of glass lying about in the corner. I had hooks, and I had metal cables wrapped around, looking like Hellraiser.
That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Also, shards of glass specifically in the corner.
That's what he said.
Like, you can't get more metal than that.
I feel like he dropped a cup and was like, fuck it. Vacuuming isn't even cool.
Vampires don't vacuum.
At school in Murray, Rod was approached by a boy named Jaden. His real name is Steven. And Jaden is his chosen vampire name.
Okay. I like Jaden better.
Yeah, we're going to go with Jaden because it's way more fun.
Yeah.
And also, I did see that as an adult, he still goes by Jaden.
Yeah, he does.
So, like, live that life, you know? So, he was approached by a boy named Jaden. Saw Rod was an outsider, and he wanted to offer him his friendship, which is mm-hmm. so nice.
That's very nice.
It took about a year until Jaden asked him to be part of his vampire house, or his inner circle. So, Jaden was deep, deep into the vampire lifestyle, which is sort of nice that they're, like, getting this little vampire friendship happening.
Right, yeah.
And he taught Rod about a blood ritual called crossing over. So this was the first time he learned about this besides just like drinking each other's blood in his bedroom.
Jaden's kind of like his like mentor into vampirism.
Oh, absolutely.
Got it.
So in this crossing over ceremony, one vampire makes a human into another vampire by drinking each other's blood in like this little ritualistic ceremony. It was around this time that Rod really started getting into his vampire persona. Jaden asked Rod to meet him at a very specific tombstone at their local cemetery. They called this tombstone the birthplace, and he asked him to meet him there in the middle of the night. The two cut themselves on the arm with a razor blade, just enough to draw blood. Rod drank the blood from Jaden's arm first, and then Jaden from Rod's arm. They also call this siring a vampire.
Like in Buffy.
Yeah, so like when a vampire turns you, that vampire is like your ultimate like new daddy or whatever.
Yeah, so Jaden was Rod's maker, if we're going like True Blood type of route.
Yeah, he was like his big daddy vampire. Yeah. Is how I like to say it. Sandra, his mom, is sort of like feeding into this more so by letting Rod stay out all night long. She lets him skip school whenever he wants to, and she just doesn't seem like she truly cares about his drug and alcohol use, which is fucking rampant at this point.
Well, I mean, she's got a couple of screws loose, too, so.
Yeah, she's not doing great.
Nope.
With this new group of friends and with Jaden as his mentor, Rod is gaining a lot of confidence in his position as a powerful vampire. He starts collecting friends from, like, a similar shitty background as him, like people that don't have the best home life or don't have very supportive parents or are just like super angsty, gothy teens.
Yeah.
Rod changed Scott into a vampire, and poor Scott was so into it that he just like totally bought into all of this shit.
Yeah. So I watched an episode of a show called Deadly Cults. It's actually season one, episode one. They cover this case.
It's very good.
It's very good. I think I'm going to have to watch all of the rest of the episodes. But so Scott actually talks, they interview him, and he talks about, you know, how he lived in a trailer, they had garbage bags taped to broken windows, you know, to keep out, like, the rain and the snow. He was super poor. He also said that he worked at McDonald's and that would bring home leftovers for his younger siblings because if he didn't, then they wouldn't have anything to eat.
Oh my God, how heartbreaking was that?
Exactly. Those are the type of people that, you know, fell under Rod's spell.
Yeah, they just wanted a sense of family, and he sort of provided that with his little vampire coven.
Exactly.
In quick succession, Rod started turning people like it was his freaking job. Honestly, it was impressive. He had like a tally sheet. He meets a 16-year-old girl named Charity Kesey. They started dating, and he turned her into a vampire shortly after, because that's love, ladies. He then meets an older girl. She's about 19 at the time. Her name is Dana Cooper, and he almost immediately turns her. Like, I'm sorry, what was your name? Oh, yeah, let's do this type situation. And Jaden was the leader of this vampire clan, but he noticed that Rod was starting to get a little aggressive with his blood drinking. He even sliced one of his vampire family on the arm so deep that he cut into the muscle. Ugh. See, as I have learned very recently, when you are a vampire, you only drink enough blood to survive. You don't ever drain someone of blood.
Right. I read that blood, it kind of gives you like an energy and more of a power. But like Noelle said before, we want to point out here that a lot of people identify as vampires, right? They drink blood from willing participants.
Yes.
They follow the path of the vampire, and they also don't murder people.
Right.
This is like the extreme of being a vampire. Just like there's an extreme to any type of community or group of people. Not all vampires are sadistic murderers. And if you identify as a vampire, that is completely fine.
Right.
And actually, if you do, we'd like to hear from you.
I absolutely want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Because this is fascinating and incredible.
Right.
And if it helps, I went through a very intense goth phase.
Did you? Oh, yeah. In middle school, I remember.
It was a hard goth phase. So let me know and we'll chat about black clothing with a lot of chains on it or something. But yeah, basically, I think what Nicole's trying to sell here is that everyone who gets their blood like drained from a vampire, it's consensual.
Yeah. Right.
Like if it's not consensual, there's just like with anything that's not consensual, it's a fucking problem.
Yeah.
So this was very consensual.
Yes.
They just drank each other's blood for funsies.
Yeah. It was just a group of people who followed the same path and would occasionally drink each other's blood.
Yeah. Just chill. Rod's violence was on the upward trend at this point, as showcased by cutting someone super deep with a razor.
Yeah.
And according to court documents from this time, Rod had once forced his way into an animal shelter in Murray, Kentucky. I am very much going to breeze over the facts here because it's aggressive and I do not want to read it. It makes me feel sick.
Yeah.
But once he was inside, he attacked dozens of dogs. He killed two of them and he injured another so badly that it had to be euthanized. Which to me, this seems almost exactly like serial killer escalation.
Yeah, 100%.
Like he's getting this need to kill things.
Yep.
Jaden is totally sick of Rod's shit at this point. So he decides that they need to have a little chat, vamp to vamp. He invites Rod to take a walk with him that night. And as they're walking, this little tiny kitty crosses their path. Trigger warning here. Yeah. Rod grabbed the kitty by its neck and he slammed its tiny little body against a tree. He snapped its neck, but it didn't die. So the kitty was convulsing on the ground, dying, and Rod was laughing and Jaden was fucking fuming.
Yeah, the animal stuff in this story really makes my stomach turn. And there's details on what he did to the animals in the shelter and it's just sick. And you just don't look it up.
No.
It's bad.
I mean, if you really want to know, you can look it up, but we don't want to talk about it. It's too much. Mm-hmm. So Jaden tells Rod, like, this isn't fucking funny. What is your problem? And he's getting really pissed off now because he's murdering tiny little baby animals in front of him. Mm-hmm. And Rod looks at him and he answers, you and your holier than thou attitude is my problem. And then the two of them start like a physical fight. So they're slapping each other and trying to punch each other. But I did read that Rod totally owned up to it. And he described it more of like Jaden pinning Rod to a wall by his neck with his hand. And like a little bit like lifting him off the ground. Mm-hmm. And then Rod was like, okay, fucking stop. And then he just like set him down and was like, I hate you. And he's like, I hate you too.
Yeah. Rod admits that it wasn't even a fight. I mean, Rod was a very scrawny boy.
Yeah.
And there was just no fight. It was basically just Jaden pushing him up against the wall, telling him, like, we're done. You're killing animals and shit.
Yeah.
Like, you need to stop.
Right. And then this is what ultimately makes Rod and Jaden cut ties. So Rod goes off and he starts his own vampire clan. And he calls it Vampire Clan because he's very original. He has Scott, Dana, and Charity by his side. So it's this little four-person clan at this point. The vampire clan grew to about 25 to 30 members at one point.
Whoa.
But it was really like this core four that ran things with Rod at the helm.
I wasn't reading too much of it, but when I was doing my research for this episode, there is a Reddit AMA from someone who claims they were a part of Rod's vampire clan.
No shit.
Yeah. He says, I think it's a man, and he says he wasn't a part of, obviously he wasn't part of the people who went down, you know?
Right.
But he claims that he was a part of this clan, and someone was like, show us your, because you know how he cut a V into all of the people who were in his clan?
Right. I'll tell you why in a minute.
Yeah. Sorry, spoiler. But, he, like, somebody was like, oh, show us your V or your cut or whatever, your scar. And they were like, oh, it's faded. So I don't know how true that is. But there is somebody on Reddit who claims to have been a part of this clan. So
I want to believe.
Yeah.
I love nothing more than a Reddit AMA.
Yes.
Like when we were doing our werewolf one.
Yes.
I was on that fucking werewolf AMA for, I shit you not, maybe 3 hours.
It's like the best rabbit holes to jump down.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Sorry to interrupt you. You can carry on.
No, that was an incredible interruption, and I need you to send me that Reddit later, please. Okay, so we'll get into this little V situation now. Rod, at this point, starts telling people that actually he's not a 15-year-old from Florida/Kentucky. He's a 500-year-old vampire, and his name? It's Visago.
Ooh.
Psycho. Which, the V. So he carves a V into people because they belong to Visago.
Yep.
This 500-year-old vampire, which absolutely 10,000% reminds me of Viago from What We Do in the Shadows, which is one of my all-time favorite movies.
It's one of my favorite shows, too.
It's incredible. So he insists that he was born in the 1400s and that actually he's an undead prince.
Well, of course he is. His name is Visago.
I'm pretty fucking sure if you asked him to just one fact from the 1400s, just one, like what kind of cars did they drive then, Rod? He'd be like, it was a Model T or something. Like, I feel like he wouldn't know a fucking thing about the 1400s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd give you some bullshit answer and dance around it for sure. But
yeah, I just want to ask him so bad. While he is developing this ultra persona, he is no longer really Rod. He's more of like acting like he's a god, like he's untouchable in some sense. Mm-hmm. Once his mom walked in on him and his girlfriend Charity drinking each other's blood, which was a usual thing for
casual.
Him. And then another time he was found carving an upside down cross into his own chest with a razor blade. And his mom was just like, can you do her voice?
Oh, honey, do what feels right. Well, I mean, she's also like, if you're going to drink each other's blood, I'd rather you do it in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's not a regular mom. She's a cool mom.
She's a cool mom.
So.
That's true. He comes home from school and she has like little martini glasses full of blood full for of him. Blood. Mm-hmm. And these kids are also doing a ton of fucking drugs at this time, especially LSD. Mm. Like, so many drugs. I cannot drive that home enough. Rod is said to have actually taken, like, usually about 10 doses of LSD at one time, which is fucking insane. And I do not know how drugs work because I don't eat drugs. But how is he not dead?
Okay, so one time I was at this electric music festival. I fucking hate EDM music, but all my friends like it. And I just used to kind of tag along for funsies, right? So the festival, it was like kind of like a weekend long camping festival, like Country Thunder, but with even shittier music.
Duh.
And hallucinogenic drugs instead of like beer and racism, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this guy stumbles onto our campsite and his eyes are just black. Like his pupils are dilated. Most I have ever seen pupils dilated.
Oh, yeah. Like President Trump's.
Yeah, they're just straight black. And he sits down. He's being weird. We all just kind of look around and we're like, does anyone know this dude? Like, why is he sitting down? And then all of a sudden his friends come over and they like pick him up and they're like, oh, sorry, like so sorry. And his one friend's like, you know, we're so sorry. He just licked an entire sheet of acid. And we all just like looked at each other and we were like, what the fuck? I'm not sure how many doses an entire sheet of acid is, but I can tell you that this kid was not having a good time.
He doesn't sound like it. I feel like, again, I don't know drug things, but I feel like if you're going to do more than like double the normal dose.
Yeah, it's scary shit.
You're probably going to die on the inside or the outside. Yeah. It doesn't, I don't know. It really fucking freaks me out. Like maybe don't eat every acid ever.
Right. I mean, and he didn't die that weekend because nobody, I mean, they didn't report it if he did, but I can guarantee that he probably spent the night in the medical tent, so.
Maybe he was so high that he went out into the woods and he dug a grave. And he was like, I'm just going to go in here now. And he laid in there and his friends were so fucking sick of his shit that they left. And then he woke up 18 days later.
And then they made a movie called 18 Days Later.
Oh, yeah.
About his life. Yes.
Hey guys, it's Brad. Oh, yeah. I think it's out in theaters after COVID's over.
Yeah.
So anyways, there was this abandoned house in an area called Land Between the Lakes where the vampire clan would hang out all the time. This is where they did every drug that they could get their hands on.
Yep.
They called it the Vampire Hotel, which honestly sounds like a fucking Disney movie to me.
Are you thinking of Hotel Transylvania with Adam Sandler?
Oh, yes.
Now I'm just picturing, like, cartoon creatures outside in the cemetery, and it's not scary anymore.
No, it's not scary at all. Well, this is where they would go to eat all their drugs and drink all their blood and do tons of, like, dark rituals and worship Satan, and then also just have, like, regular teenage house parties.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the house, it was just, like, an abandoned house. I'll post a picture of it on our social media when this comes out. But it's just like a spray-painted house that says, like, Vampire Hotel on top or whatever. Yeah. So the house is also rumored to be ripe with paranormal activity well before the vampires took over, which local legend says is why it was abandoned.
Oh, okay.
And at this point, Rod is still talking to Heather, who you remember he met when he lived back in Florida.
Right.
He tells her that he's going to make her a vampire when he sees her again, and she is so totally down for this.
I mean, I would be too. I'm not going
to
lie.
Honestly. So shit starts to get kind of weird, but also just kind of like regular, like angsty teenagery with them. Mm-hmm. And Heather writes to Rod, "My parents are hurting me. I hate it here. I wish you could come pick me up and take me away, but then you would have to kill my parents to do that."
Okay.
And Rod's little vampire ears perk up, and he's like, "Wait, you want me to kill your parents? Done. I'm free on, like, Friday. Does 3 p.m. work for you? Is that work?" And Heather was like, "No, no, 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 no. I was joking. Do not kill my parents. Rod, Rod, you hear? Rod, got it. My parents should be alive." And Rod was like, "Yeah, I heard you. I won't kill your parents."
Right, he's like totally not gonna kill your parents, as he's like winking his one eye dramatically.
He says wink out loud. He's like, not wink, wink,
nudge, nudge.
And she's like, "Dude, do not fucking kill my parents." And he's like, "I won't kill your parents." And this time, things are escalating, and Rod is just, like, fucking ready to do some reckless shit. Like, he's murdering dogs, he's slicing people up, he was born in the 1400s, he's ready to party. So Rod decides that him and the vampire clan are gonna go on a little road trip, vampire style.
Vampire road trip!
Vampire road trip!
All right. So, Rod forms this plan, or a rescue mission, as they called it.
Yeah.
So, the plan was for Rod, Scott, Charity, and Dana to all pack into Scott's old red Buick and make the six-hour drive down to Eustis, Florida. Their plan was to get Heather Wendorf and Rod's other friend, Janine LeClaire, and together, the six of them, they were going to run away to New Orleans and live as a family.
That's so nice.
Right? But not so nice.
No.
Rod claimed that he knew a powerful vampire who was the leader of a group in the city. He basically told them that New Orleans was the place to be if you were a vampire. The vampire population was well known. They could be what they wanted to be without the judging looks they experienced in their suburban towns. And New Orleans is known as the vampire capital of the world.
So, New Orleans is a very spooky-dooky place.
Yeah, it
but
is.
But I also just fucking feel like he was like, "Yeah, I know a pretty powerful vampire. Her name is Anne Rice. And she interviews, like, a bunch of other vampires. So..."
No, his name is Lestat? He's totally not Tom Cruise.
No.
So, on November 24th, 1996... Rod, Scott, Dana, and Charity grab some snacks for the road, fill up the gas tank, and hop in to make the trek down to Florida. During the trip, Rod was kind of going back and forth between his Visago persona and his Rod persona. So one moment he'd be Rod, he'd be laughing with his friends, flirting with his girlfriend Charity. The next he'd be Visago, spewing verses from the fictional book The Necronomicon, also known as the Book of the Dead. And apparently, the Necronomicon appears in many different fictional works, but was actually first created by H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
And it appeared in many of his stories.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. I was just listening. I don't know what I was listening to. It might have been a podcast about the Necronomicon. Yes. yes, it's the weekend after Comic-Con. And people think it's like a real book because it's in so many other books.
And story. Yeah, a lot of different authors and writers. And actually, if you're a fan of Evil Dead, the Necronomicon Ex Mortis.
Yeah.
Hey, hey.
It's like Nicole's favorite movie.
Yeah. So it's all kind of in the same boat.
Yeah.
Rod was also apparently cutting himself with a razor blade to calm himself down.
Yeah, if there's one thing that calms me down, it is deep bloody wounds on my arms. Honestly, I feel like I should do it right now.
Who doesn't love it? Who doesn't? So during the whole trip, Rod's sort of bordering between his two different personalities, and his friends are actually kind of getting a little bit worried.
Yeah, no shit, dude. He's in the back and he's like, hey guys, pass the Pringles. What are those, barbecue? I, Visago, was born in the 1400s. Hand me that razor blade, human being, you disgust. Anyways, what are those? Are they barbecue? No, I don't think they are. Are those original? Give me those. And it's just like, that would be fucking stressful.
Yeah. And you're in a car with this person for 6 hours,
mind you. A very small car.
Mm-hmm. So Rod was known to do this, though. This was apparently a thing that he did. His mother said that sometimes he would just kind of stare at nothing. And then at one moment, he'd be, like, just staring. And then the next, he would just fly off the handle with rage and anger. And sometimes afterwards, he just would not remember doing it at all. And he would just completely black out.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you eat 2 sheets of acid on, like, a Tuesday afternoon, and then for dinner you just have, like, 4 rails of cocaine.
Mm-hmm. And then some shrooms for dessert.
I almost feel like maybe it fucks with your brain.
Yeah.
And you can develop some sort of disorder.
Well, it definitely wasn't helping if he did have a disorder. I mean, I'm no psychiatrist, and I don't claim to be, but I think that this is pretty clear that there's something going on mentally with Rod.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the fantasies, the blackouts, the rage, they're not signs of someone who is mentally healthy. And his excessive use of LSD and heroin and other drugs obviously did not help his condition.
No. I bet he was just blacking out, though, because he was losing so much blood to calm himself down, you know?
Maybe, actually.
Like, go to sleep, Rod. And then he'd, like, cut himself until he went to sleep.
That actually, I'd never thought of that, but that could be a possibility also.
I know we're laughing, I'm sorry, but he's kind of a fucking douche chill.
Yeah, so. He killed 2 people, so we don't have any sympathy. Sorry.
Not even 1 sympathy.
When the 4 get to Eustace, they first stop at one of Rod's old friend, Shannon Yui's house, and she was actually an old girlfriend of Rod's, but they still kind of kept in touch. But when she saw Rod, she was a little taken aback. Rod now had long hair that he had dyed black. He's normally a ginger.
Yes. He should have dyed his eyebrows too, because honey, eyebrows do not lie.
Yeah, his roots are pretty bad in all of the crime photos where he's like being taken away into the jail.
They're not good.
They're not good.
His hair is impressively long, but also I feel like no one ever gave him a hairbrush.
It's fried.
It's not
all
good.
All of the dyeing black that he did. So Rod's also wearing, like, a long black trench coat, and he's accompanied by 3 people that Shannon just has no idea who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Rod asks Shannon if he and his friends can come in, clean up a bit, maybe shower and some stuff, because they've just been in a car for 6 hours. And she's a little hesitant at first, but then she agrees to let them come in. Rod tells her the plan, and he tells her that they're going to pick up Heather and Janine and that they're all headed to New Orleans. Rod actually has Shannon call Heather and has her tell Heather that Rod is going to be picking Heather up from school and that from there they're going to go to a graveyard and Rod's going to perform his crossing over ceremony.
Every time we say crossing over, I think of that show Crossing Over with John Edwards.
Oh my god.
Sorry, I just have to say it out loud.
Anyways, this is the ceremony that would turn Heather into a vampire,
right,
to officially be a part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So Shannon is very unnerved by Rod and his friend's presence, and she asks Rod, you know, like, do you really think that Heather's parents are going to let her stay in New Orleans? And Rod tells Shannon, I'm probably going to have to kill them. And no one really knew if he was serious or not because Rod joked about killing people all of the time.
I mean, to be fair, I joke about killing people a lot.
Yeah.
But I also don't eat every acid available to me at one time.
That's a very true, valid point.
And I know what year I was born.
It was not 1400.
And it was 1991. Okay, so I think we're good.
On November 25th, 1996, Jennifer Wendorf, 17, comes home after 10 p.m. Jennifer Wendorf is the older sister of Heather Wendorf. It's past her curfew, and so she kind of sneaks into the house. She's trying to be quiet so her parents don't catch her. Jennifer was a pretty popular girl. She's 17 years old. She's a cheerleader at Eustis High School, and she actually has a scholarship to FSU.
Cool.
Jennifer, being the older sister of Heather, like I mentioned, was very unlike her sister. Heather was kind of like the artist of the family, the free spirit, the black sheep, rebel type.
Mm.
So they're like kind of polar opposites.
Yeah.
In the documentary that I watched, they interview Heather's old teacher, and he says that Heather used to have a hangman's noose wrapped around a Barbie doll's neck attached to her backpack, and she would just like carry it around. So we have the hangman's noose Barbie carrying sister, and then we have the cheerleading scholarship sister, just to paint a picture for you guys right now.
Their names to me kind of are those personalities. Like, I'm Jennifer, and she's Jenny. Yeah, and she's like the cheerleader. And then Heather, I mean, we've all seen the show Heathers, the movie. She's dark, man. She's Winona.
So Jennifer walks in. She sees her dad sleeping on the couch, and she thinks to herself, oh, phew, they're sleeping. I'm safe. I made it. I won't get in trouble for being past curfew. Then Jennifer makes her way into the kitchen, and she sees blood everywhere. She finds her mother face down on the kitchen floor, dead. With her head bashed in.
Oh my God.
She then runs to check on her father and notices that there's actually blood all over the couch, and he too is dead. His head bashed in as well.
Oh, I got goosebumps. This is so sad.
She notices that the family's electric blue 1994 Explorer is missing along with her 15-year-old sister, Heather. Jennifer calls the police in a panic. She tells them her parents are dead. The car and her sister are missing, and you can read the transcript for her 911 call online, and they played a little bit of it in the documentary, and it's just heartbreaking, like you said. Imagine coming home and finding your parents dead.
I can't even imagine that. I cannot fucking imagine that.
Yeah. So the poor girl, she keeps saying, I don't know if the person is still in the house. Just imagine that fear. Not only did you find your parents dead, but you're calling from your home and you have no idea if the person's still there. So I believe she locked herself in Heather's room is what the transcript says, is what she tells the operator.
Yeah.
I don't know if Heather was the only one who had a phone in her room, or maybe it was just like the closest room she could get to. But so she's in Heather's room. She locks the door. She's waiting for the police to show up. So let's back it up a little bit, and let's get more details of what actually transpired on that fateful day. Heather and Rod were very close, and even though Heather was still in Florida, Rod moved back to Murray, they kept in touch. The ex-lovers would actually chat on the phone all the time, so much so that they ran up hundreds of dollars worth of long-distance phone calls.
Remember when long-distance phone calls used to cost more?
Right. I was writing this, and I was like, wait. She was calling Murray, Kentucky, and this is like a charge for her?
Yeah, dude, that shit used to be so expensive.
Yeah. So during these phone calls, like Noelle said, Heather tells Rod about her parents, tells them that they're abusive. She hates her life. Rod then sort of transforms into a vampire knight in shining armor.
Oh.
In his mind, he was saving Heather. And in the documentary, they interview Scott Anderson, after the fact, obviously. Yeah. And he says that Heather told them that her father was abusing her and that her mother knew about it, but she didn't do anything.
Awful.
Whether or not this is true, this is another scenario where we don't know. Right. Jennifer has never made any claims that her father was abusive, but that doesn't mean he wasn't only abusive to Heather.
Right.
So we don't know.
We do not know.
Opposite side, though, Heather could have just been saying that to manipulate Rod into doing her dirty work.
Also true.
So
she could have just been, like, very dramatic about it. Right. I mean, it could be true, but she could also just be, like, trying to get some kind of sympathy, and he's
right.
6 hours away, so she's like, what are you going to do, drive 300 miles and find out?
Exactly. So Rod comes up with this rescue mission. He gets the family together. They craft this whole drive down to Florida plan. On November 25th, when the clan makes it to town on a Sunday night, they pick up Heather, they go to Greenwood Cemetery to hang out, and Rod performs the ritual. He cuts his arm 3 times, and Heather drinks from him, and the ceremony is complete. Heather's a vampire. She's now a part of the family.
Nice.
Rod and Heather separate from the group and are gone for about an hour. Scott Anderson believes that this is when Heather convinced Rod to murder her parents.
I don't know if Rod needed convincing.
I don't think he did either. On the day of the murder, they meet Heather about a quarter mile away from her house. Rod and Scott are to go into the house, steal the car, because Scott's Buick was actually having some troubles and they feared it wouldn't make it to New Orleans. They were to grab any money or valuables that they could get their hands on to try to fund their trip. Mm-hmm. And then they were supposed to leave. So Heather gets in the car with Charity and Dana, and they drive away while Rod and Scott make their way into the Wendorf residence. Scott says in the documentary that Rod just had this fantasy in his head that he just wanted to kill someone. So if it wasn't Heather's parents, it would have been someone else. Like, he had this in his mind. It was just a matter of time before he acted on it.
Oh, serial killer. Yep. I mean, he's killing all these animals and he's cutting people. And yeah. It really, to me, is just like one step after another.
Right.
Yeah.
Scott says that at first he was scared, but he was also kind of excited as they walked up to the house. So they come in from the garage and they see the Explorer in the garage.
And they're like, sick, electric blue.
Initially, Scott and Rod had entered the house carrying big sticks or clubs. But then Rod spotted a crowbar hanging in the garage and he trades his big stick for the crowbar. They make their way into the house through a utility room door through the garage that had been unlocked. And this is my fucking platform and I'm going to stand on it. Lock your garage doors, people.
Do people not?
I cannot tell you how many people I know who have a garage that connects to their house. And they straight up do not lock that door.
Holy shit.
It's insane to me. And I think that, like, the thought process is that their garage door is closed, so no one's going to get in. But let me run this little scenario in your brain for a second.
Okay.
Let me just paint it for you. You come home late at night.
Sure.
You're tired.
Yeah.
You have a couple of bags. Your hands are full. You don't lock your car door because you're like, oh, just let me put this stuff down. I'll go back and lock it later.
Mm-hmm.
You come in, you drop your stuff off, but you forget to lock your car. I bet you have a garage door opener in that car that is now unlocked.
Holy shit.
And bam, someone can come in and murder you.
I didn't even think of that.
Literally, this is my biggest fear. And so I always, always, always lock my door, because I have a door that leads from my home into my garage. I always lock that door.
I can't believe people don't. I don't have that. My garage is not attached.
I mean, I hope now that they all will after listening to this, but it's one of my biggest fears.
Dude, also, like, I'm just saying, if someone really wants to get into your house, metal garage doors are extremely easy to kick in.
Yes. Or to pull up.
Yeah. Like, that shit is not fucking secure. I did not know people weren't locking their fucking... Holy shit, this is blowing my mind.
I know, so I can count like 3 people that I know that don't.
This is freaking me out.
Yeah. Yep.
Lock your fucking doors.
Lock your garage door.
People want to kill you and rob you. Lock your doors. Anyways, let's get back to the story.
Anyways.
That was fun.
I know, it was fun. So Rod and Scott walk into the house. Scott says he was looking for money when they spotted Heather's dad, 49-year-old Richard Wendorf, laying on the couch while the TV is on pretty loud. He's asleep.
It's a classic dad move.
Yeah.
Good old Dickie Wenz laying there watching sports, right. Falls asleep.
Yep.
Oh, no.
And this is when Rod starts swinging. Rod beats Richard Wendorf to death. He hits him 22 times, fracturing his skull and his ribs.
Oh my God, I'm getting goosebumps.
Richard was sleeping while he was attacked and was just automatically knocked unconscious, and he has no chance to fight back. So, doesn't even get the chance to wake up.
Wow.
Pretty much. Scott said he didn't know that that was the plan, and we don't know if that's true or not. Rod says differently. Scott says he didn't know that was the plan. So he's shocked, and he's just kind of frozen in place. And Scott says that he said to Rod, "What are you doing?" And Rod yelled back, "Go get the fucking money." And at this point, Scott said he was just scared, and he just kind of did what Rod told him to do at the moment because he didn't know what else to do.
He's probably fucking panicking.
Yeah. And actually, Rod says that Scott just kind of stood there too and and froze and didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So I believe that part of it. Heather's mom, Naomi, also known as Ruth.
Classic nickname for Naomi.
Right. I don't know how they got that from that, but we're gonna call her Ruth. So she's walking out from the kitchen with a cup of hot coffee in her hand. So she's walking into the living room and she sees Scott and Rod and she says, "Who are you and what do you want?" Rod then turns towards Ruth and starts to come at her. Like I said, she's carrying the hot coffee. She throws it in Rod's face.
Fuck yeah, Ruth.
Wants to give a shout out to Ruth because Mama fought for her life.
Dude, even just seeing two men in your house and being like, "Who the fuck are you? Right? And what the fuck do you want?" Right. That's a baller ass move.
It is. And so she starts scratching Rod. She digs her nails into his skin, into his cheeks, his face. But it's no match for Rod and his crowbar.
Ugh.
Rod bludgeons Ruth 20 times. And he stabs her in the head and severs her brain stem, which kills her instantly.
He stabs her with a crowbar?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, the spikiness. He's like hitting her on the head with the spiky part. And it penetrated the back of her brain stem. And
oh my God.
She dies instantly. Scott said that Rod actually went harder on Ruth than he did on Richard. I'm thinking probably because she was awake and she was fighting back.
Right. That makes sense.
And Rod actually claimed in his confession that killing Ruth wasn't actually initially a part of his sick plan, but since she came at him and she attacked him, he says that he had no choice. But I think he probably would have killed both of them regardless.
Yeah.
Rod and Scott grab some food, they grab whatever money they can find, any valuables, and they pile into the Explorer. Rod uses the car's cigarette burner and burns the letter V into Richard's chest. Rod and Scott then pull up to Janine LeClaire's house in the Explorer, and she just kind of feels like something is off. Scott and Rod, they're not wearing shirts, they're driving a stolen car, and she just kind of opts out. She's like, "Nah, I'm good. You guys go to New Orleans. I'm gonna stay here in Florida." So you know it's bad if she opts out to stay in Florida.
Yeah, honestly. And that's a great fucking choice.
Yes.
I feel like they roll up. They have to have blood splatter all over them. At least Rod does.
I mean, on their skin and stuff. They took their shirts off, but she probably is like, there's blood all over your face.
That's not how we do it in Florida.
Rod and Scott then go to pick up Charity, Dana, and Heather. They switch the license plates from Scott's car to the Explorer. And Rod waits until they get into Louisiana, and then he tells the girls what he did. Scott said Charity and Dana were just kind of shocked. They didn't know how to react. And that Heather started to scream. In the documentary, Scott said that he initially believed Heather's reaction to be real, that she was actually distraught by hearing that her parents had been murdered. But he says that over the years of him being in jail and having time to reflect, he thinks it was just an act to throw the others off. He believes that she knew what the plan was and that her and Rod had actually planned it together.
So the saddest thing to me about this entire thing start to end is that the bodies were found by Jennifer.
Yeah.
Heather's 17-year-old sister.
I mean, she's lucky she was out at the time because she probably would have been killed too.
Oh, she absolutely would have been. Mm-hmm. But what I can't stop thinking is, so she snuck in, you said, and yeah. she thought like the coast was clear and she could go upstairs, mm-hmm. right?
Because she saw her dad on the couch, but she didn't really check, so she just thought he was sleeping.
Imagine if her mom wasn't in the kitchen and she was like dead somewhere else in the house, right? Mm. And you go to sleep and you wake up in the next morning and you go downstairs and then you find it. That almost feels like that would be worse.
Yeah, me. For sure.
And I just, my heart well, then fucking breaks.
They'd
for
have
her.
A whole other day of them escaping. So it yeah. actually could have been harder to try to find them.
Oh, absolutely. It's just so sad. And I mean, I can't even imagine what it's like to be her. Mm-hmm. It just hurts me. Meanwhile, all five of our absolute favorite vampires have taken the stolen Explorer and they start heading west on Interstate 10 through Tallahassee to New Orleans to start their new life together as a little family. The police put out a bulletin to be on the lookout for the license plates from Heather's parents' car. They get a location on the plates, but the vehicle does not match the description that it should. Mm-hmm. The car is registered to a Scott Anderson from Murray, Kentucky. And then they have a very solid lead. So they change their bulletin to look for Scott's plates on the stolen electric blue Explorer.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also, apparently Jennifer just straight up told the cops that it was probably Rod. Like, she knew that her mom and Heather were having issues regarding mm-hmm. her attitude and the people she was hanging out with. And the... The Eustis police knew who Rod was because, oh, you know, sure. he lived in the town. Apparently, in the documentary, there's a cop and she's like, oh, yeah, we knew Rod. We had a fair share of run-ins with him, you yeah. know. He used to swing a samurai sword around his front lawn while wearing yes. a black trench coat. Mm-hmm. And they actually showed a picture of him, like, posing with the sword. And I couldn't for the life of me find it online to show you. But it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
You know what? I'm going to play it on my phone and screenshot it because it Please. Is so good. You Please. Need to see it, people.
Yeah. And he used to like brag that the reason there were no cats in the neighborhood was because he lived there. Like, he's a piece of shit. Anyways, yeah.
Yeah, he's absolutely terrible. And also great automatic accent for that cop. You are fucking did nailing
I,
this.
Did I do
absolutely that? Didn't. It was so good. So on November 27th, partially thanks to Jennifer, murder warrants were placed for the arrest of Rod, Scott, Charity, Dana, and Heather. They crossed four state lines on their way to Louisiana, and the trip took about 4 days. So imagine being in this car for 4 days with these fucking people.
I just envision that it just reeks like body odor.
Oh my God, I don't even want to imagine. And Rod's just like cutting himself the whole time. You're like, calm down, Roddy. You got to calm down.
You got this.
It's fucking terrible. So Rod will go on to say that they had been pulled over 5 times on the way to Louisiana. He said he was driving the whole time also, which I don't necessarily believe. But I definitely don't believe that they got pulled over 5 times.
I mean, unless the... Well, actually...
We,
you know what I was going to say.
I do.
I was going to say, unless the police just really suck in Louisiana, but.
We do know that he was pulled over once, and he told police that they were just college students going to visit a friend. And by all accounts, Rod was very well-spoken and extremely polite when he wanted to be. Mm. So I can only assume that he was probably able to talk his way out of any trouble at least one time, but. Definitely not 5 times.
Yeah, if you watch interviews with him on YouTube, which is why I told you to speak like Brad Pitt in
yeah.
an interview with a vampire, he actually kind of like talks as if he's a 500-year-old vampire. Like, there's no other way for me to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, like at one point in the interview, he was like, and thus I must tell you that in the year of our Lord 1400... we invented fire. And it's just like, Rod, you don't know what you're talking about, man. That was invented way earlier than that. You don't know anything from the 1400s.
You also said Model Ts existed, so...
They the did? God, just... Rod. Well, on the way to New Orleans, they had stopped in Crestview, Florida for some gas, some little road trip nibbles, and a knife, which they bought with Richard Wendorf's stolen Discover card. And my question is, how fucking stupid can you be? Did they not know that this sort of stuff is so easily tracked?
Well, it was the 90s. We have to remember, it was the 96?
Yeah.
That DNA was just becoming a thing back then, so can't blame them.
That's true, and I guess they were teenagers.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. Come on, dude.
Well, I mean, not Rod. He was a 500-year-old vampire.
Oh, that's true.
He should have known better.
He should know by now. The group gets to New Orleans, and they feel like the city is crawling with police officers. They pull up to a gas station, but realize that they only have a few dollars between them. While they are kind of talking, like, outside of their car at the gas station, they're approached by two cops. These cops tell them that they have to leave or they will ticket them for loitering.
How many run-ins with cops are they going to say that they had?
At least a couple. And this one is verified.
Okay, so the cops in Louisiana just aren't doing their jobs?
I don't know if they've ever done their jobs. So they get back into the car because they're shitting their fucking pants at this point. And they drive literally just around the block when they spot a house that looks empty. They park the car down the street, they walk up to the house, and they break in. They steal a bow and arrow and a little piggy bank that has about $20 worth of coins in it. This is totally enough gas money to fill their tank because it was the 90s and gas was free. And Rod makes the decision that they are going to go to Baton Rouge. He doesn't like the presence of police in the area, and he says that they will be safer there. So everyone gets back in the car and drives about an hour to Baton Rouge. When they're just within the city limits, they pull over. Rod ditches the murder weapon. Fucking finally.
Yeah, I read, Scott said that it was, like, in the back seat with the girls.
Yeah.
And, like, by their feet, and they were, like, trying not to touch it.
Because it had one of their parents' like, brains on it.
Yeah.
Insane to me.
Yeah.
And he also ditches the bloody clothes that they had. On Thanksgiving of 1996, the group stops at an arcade in Baton Rouge, which I read Rod was really adamant that they stop to play some video games for some reason. So that's just kind of like, to me, driving home the fact that he doesn't give a shit about anything that's just happened.
Right. He's like, guys, wait, I gotta beat my high score in Street Fighter before we leave, okay?
He absolutely would play Street Fighter.
Right.
And while they were there, Charity decides to call her mom to ask her to wire her some money because they're very much running out of money. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they're not using the credit card anymore because obviously they thought that was cool before.
Maybe they smartened up.
Maybe. A little too late though. Charity's grandmother actually picks up the phone and she immediately begins asking questions because that's what grandmothers do.
Hell yeah, grandma.
She wants to find out where Charity is. She asks for her exact location. She wants to know who she's with, why she's there, and then she also just sort of tests the waters to see if she's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw, like, differing accounts of Charity kind of, like, giving her grandma clues, like, we're in trouble, please help us, I'm with someone that did something bad. I saw that a couple places, but not every place that I looked, so I don't know if that's true.
Yeah. Well, that's how a lot of the stuff is in the story. It's like he said, she said type of stuff, which is hard.
We are dealing with teenagers. Yeah. So the grandmother agrees to wire the money, and she convinced Charity to go to a nearby Howard Johnson Hotel, promising to pay for a room for all of them. When she got off the phone, Charity's grandmother immediately called the police to tell them what was going on, who her granddaughter was with, and where to find the teens.
Good job, grandma.
She probably thought she was, like, saving her also.
Yeah.
So I think that that's just, like, a real solid grandma move right
there. Hell yeah.
So as they pull up to this hotel in their stolen electric blue vehicle, the group is surrounded by police officers that had been there waiting for them. The police say that all the kids seem high on some sort of drug, and they seem very unremorseful when they're arrested.
Checks out.
Except Heather, who is crying hysterically. Which...
we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah. Okay. So they were all arrested and taken to Baton Rouge jail for about a week for holding before being extradited back to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot confirm if this is true, but I have some little gossip about Rod and Charity. they supposedly were seen on the CCTV cameras making out in the holding cell that they were all in. And they had to be separated, so they split them up, boys and girls.
Mm.
Again, I cannot confirm if this is true, but it was in an article by The Independent.
No, I read that too. I don't know if it was that specific time, but I read that the two of them, whenever they were alone, or I guess not even alone, they were just making out constantly. And they tried to say that Charity was carrying Rod's baby.
Okay.
But it came out that she was never pregnant.
Okay, that's a weird thing to lie about.
So in one of the videos, it's like they're talking and no one else is in the room. It's like the two of them. And he's like comforting her, like, I'll probably get like 9 years. It's okay. And she's just like crying. And he's like, but don't worry. Or he says something like, don't worry, I'll be out for like you and the baby or something. He like hints at it or says some shit. But she was never pregnant. So I don't know if she told him that.
Yeah.
If he believed it or if they just tried to use it as like, say you're pregnant so they don't put me away.
Oh, yeah. That's true. They can never test if you're pregnant. So that's a great, that's fantastic. Always do that if you're in trouble.
Yeah.
They were brought to Lake County Jail and then later moved to a juvenile facility in Ocala. In the state of Florida, in order to charge someone with murder, your case has to be brought in front of a grand jury of at least 18 people from the county that the crime happened in. So once they're in Ocala, the teens were interviewed by law enforcement. And at first, Rod denied any accusations and claimed that a rival vampire gang was framing him.
I'm sorry, a rival vampire gang? Is this like a sick, twisted, gothic version of West Side Story? Give me a break.
Like they like dance fight to like the Black Parade or something.
Right. It's like the Fangs and the... What's the other rival gang's name?
The Baby Bats.
The Fangs and the Bats.
The Fangs and the Bats. Yeah, it's...
Instead of the Sharks and the Jets.
That's right. After he was shown a huge pile of evidence, such as the stolen vehicle that belonged to the murder victim, the other vehicle belonging to Scott with the switch license plates on it, the V burned into a dead body... And fingerprints all over this crime scene. And also the charge in Florida made on a dead man's credit card. Amongst tons and tons of other evidence, he finally confessed to murdering Heather's parents.
Finally.
Finally. After they're like, you carved your name into a person's body.
Rod was here.
I mean, honestly, that's pretty brave to deny everything, especially with a case full of like such incredible evidence. Right. What if he did, just like, this is so morbid, right? Rod was, with a Z, here.
He's like, that's not me.
In blood on the carpet. He's like, I'm Visago, actually. How dare you?
He basically did that with all of the evidence that they had against him.
Dude, no shit. It was honestly insane. Rod implicated Scott, which is fucked up to me.
Yeah.
Saying that he helped with the murders and that he was aware that this was the plan the entire time.
Yeah.
He refused to admit that Heather, Dana, or Charity knew anything about the murder, even until they were well on their way to Louisiana or at the border.
Mm-hmm.
Heather was just 15 at the time, and she was adamant that she never wanted her parents to die. As a result, a grand jury did not indict her on her parents' death. She remained in a holding cell until January 28, 1997, and then she was released. All four of these teens were charged as adults, despite their age. Scott Anderson pled guilty and was charged with being a principal to first-degree murder, an accessory to armed burglary, and armed robbery, and was given a life sentence. Prosecutors alleged that both Dana and Charity were aware of the plan to kill Heather's parents, because they did not take part in the actual slaying, they were given more leniency in their sentencing. Charity was charged with third-degree murder, armed burglary, and armed robbery, and given 10 and a half years in prison. Dana was charged with third-degree murder, armed burglary, and armed robbery as well, and given 17 and a half years in prison. I think that the length of the sentences are different because Charity is 16 and Dana's 19.
Oh...
I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
So I feel like Dana's age gives her, like, more onus on the whole situation.
Right. Because they essentially had the same part in the murder. I mean, they both were not even there. Like, they were together. So,
right.
I mean, maybe one had a better lawyer also.
That could be, for sure. I wonder why they do half years.
Yeah, that's weird.
I wonder that. If anyone knows, please let us know.
Yeah, any lawyer listeners.
Yeah. Rod was charged and convicted with armed burglary, duh, armed robbery, of course, and two counts of first-degree murder. And he was given the death penalty.
Yeah.
During the trial, Rod exhibited some very intense behavior. He was snarling and growling at the jury, and he showed absolutely no remorse. He pulls his stupid, disgusting long hair over his eyes, and he blows kisses to people and, like, lips, like, licks his really gross chapped lips. Ugh. And it's absolutely bizarre. Later on, he will say that this is because he wanted to draw all the attention to him so that the others wouldn't take the brunt of the sentencing.
Except the fact that he said that Scott was, like, all in on it.
Yeah, I honestly feel like he just saw, like, a stage. So he started, like, acting cool and being like, what's up, baby? I'm fucking Visaggio.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's such a little fuck. I saw some footage of his interrogation. And he's just sitting there. He's, like, got his legs up.
Yeah.
He's laughing. And he's like, this all just feels like a dream. He's just an arrogant fuck.
He is very arrogant. Yeah. And he's quoted as saying to the news, going to the electric chair, as morbid as it may sound, has been a fantasy of mine. I used to think about that a long time ago, like when I was 9, which was like, what, 80 years ago? I don't even know. 490 years ago? Who cares? I used to dream about my own death. So it's just, it's like intriguing. It's like I was romantic with the subject of death. I don't care how I die. As long as I do, I have nothing left on this earth. So, cute, I guess? That's pretty cute.
Super cute.
Rod's attorney interrupted the proceedings on the first day to speak with the judge. He wanted to change Rod's plea from not guilty to guilty and take a bargain that excludes the death penalty.
Yeah, so I was watching, it was on YouTube, and the lawyer for the prosecution was like, I've seen a lot of shit in the courtroom, and yeah, I've never seen this.
Yeah.
It was weird that they waited right before to be like, wait. Actually, he's guilty.
So what I heard from another YouTube video,
yeah,
is that Rod, even though he's like, I just want, like, death and despair, was like, wait, they're going to kill me?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to die. And then his lawyer was like, fuck. And then he had to try to, like, weasel this little fucking douche dick's way out of this.
Honestly, yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah, so that's what I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
His attorney also tried to argue that Rod was in a fit of insanity, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
He said he just didn't know what he was doing at the time. He cites Rod's diagnosis of a schizotypal personality disorder and also Asperger's.
Asperger's? That doesn't seem right.
A therapist from the University of Florida also further attested in court that Rod could sometimes witness spiritual things like angels and demons. And they used this to try to prove that he was not firmly rooted in reality.
Mm.
But part of me, again, feels like Rod just likes to fucking show off.
Yeah, I feel like he probably did have some mental issues.
Oh, I'm that sure. Went
thoroughly untreated. I don't know how well in Kentucky in the 90s people were taking to mental health, but I think that he's also like a victim of that, but I'm not saying that what he did, that's like an excuse for what he did, but
no, I agree with you. I think that he's a victim of his own mental health and also just circumstance for sure. It's not his fault in the sense that he wasn't given the tools to like make his life better than it was, but also he fucking bludgeoned people to death, so none of this works in the trial. The jury is largely unswayed by all these diagnoses that they think are just fucking bullshit.
It's the 90s.
Yeah. The prosecutor is also very much out for blood on this. And the hope for Rod's case is absolutely fading. The prosecutor actually used Rod's own words against him, quoting Rod as saying he had enjoyed the killings and he got such a rush from beating people to death. Maybe, like, don't say shit like that.
Yeah, but like you said, he was bragging.
He absolutely was. He was
bragger.
Oh, he bragged so much to anyone that would listen about this. Mm-hmm. And Rod's mom was also used by the defense as a way to explain why Rod was such a massive bag of dicks. She said that his family never loved him, that he was neglected, that he was abused, that he never knew his dad, that society failed him. All these classic lines. And then she begs the prosecutor to not fail him now and to show him mercy.
So she's basically saying, I'm sorry for being a shitty mom and not getting my son the mental help that he clearly needed growing up.
Yeah.
Just please forgive him for brutally murdering two people and several animals because I suck. Like, I actually blame her for a lot of this. I mean, not all of it, but I think she has a part in it. Oh, and not getting him the help that he clearly needed.
Oh, yeah. She absolutely does. I mean, again, he's just totally a victim of his own circumstance here. He was born into a fucking shit pile.
Yep.
And he turned out to be a shit pile.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And she just got up on the stand and was like, yeah, I'm a terrible mom. I didn't love him. Sorry, Roddy. And the defense is just like, see, she's fucking terrible. It's not his fault. Well, the prosecutor does not fucking care. And he thinks that Rod is way too violent and way too malicious to be shown any mercy. Mm. He absolutely has a lack of remorse, and his cocky attitude just ultimately seals his fate. The 16-year-old is handed the ultimate punishment. This makes him the youngest person in the United States to be on death row.
The youngest person?
Yep, of all time.
Wow.
Until 2 years later, when the Florida Supreme Court reduced his sentence to life in prison. His sentence was delivered without the opportunity for parole because Florida had abolished the parole as a whole a long time ago.
Like, for anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. That's just what I read. I feel like it's going to be an oopsie-doopsie roundup here. In 2012, the Florida Supreme Court stated that it is unconstitutional to sentence a minor to life in prison.
Yeah.
I agree.
It should be.
In January of 2013, an appellate court dismissed the attempts made by both Rod and Scott's lawyers to get a new sentencing hearing. However, in December of 2018, Scott was granted a resentencing by a circuit judge and was given 40 years in prison, with 22 of those years being time served. He's set for release for 2031. Rod had a resentencing scheduled for July of 2019, which was rescheduled for November 9, 2019. And then it was pushed all the way to April 2020.
Whoa.
Which we know what happened then.
We know what happened in April of 2020.
Everyone got COVID.
No.
And Florida's like, COVID's not real. So that happened. They did like a video sentencing situation.
Yeah.
But the judge upheld his life sentence without parole and deemed him irreparably corrupt.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a quote from the judge. He's currently being held at Tomoka Correctional, and I saw that he gets visited by his mama twice a month.
Well, I also heard that Roddy Boy got himself a fiancé. And I'm not sure if they're still together or maybe if they're married now, but I think that's interesting. Women who fall in love with murderers with life sentences or actually even on death row.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Buy yourself a dog instead or be like that one guy and marry your car. Don't marry a murderer.
Don't marry a murderer.
Not marry a murderer.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get those women. It's just like, are you really that desperate?
That's another show we should do.
Yeah.
Serial killers and the women who loved them.
Yes. Yes.
Whoa, why isn't that a reality show? This is America, people.
I feel like it is.
It might be.
If not, let's make it.
It's called TLC. All right, so this order for Rod is not yet official because he has the right to be present in an open court to hear its pronouncement. Though he can waive that right.
Okay.
A hearing to conclude the resentencing process has not been scheduled yet because of coronavirus.
But he's been sentenced, though.
It's not official. It's like a temporary sentencing until he can get to court, and then they're just going to say it again.
But he's like, there's a chance.
It's like a 98% chance that this is going to go the way it's going.
Yeah. But you're saying there's a chance.
Sure. Sure. If coronavirus ever ends, Rod will have his day in court.
Okay.
Charity was released from prison in 2006, and Dana was released in 2011. Since the trial and this whole mess, Heather tried to change her name, but that didn't really stick. People were like, oh no, we know you. You're Heather Wendorf.
Why didn't she just move?
Well, she did move.
And people still knew who she was?
Yeah, this was like national news.
I don't know about that. Dye her hair or something.
She's since got married and she goes by Heather Wendorf Kelly. So she even fucking dropped the Wendorf part. She hyphenated it.
What? She married someone and she didn't take his name? she hyphenated Wendorf?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and she wants the attention.
She does want it because she's a budding artist.
Oh.
Yes. And I did read somewhere, although I can't, you know, confirm or deny it, that her sister wants absolutely fucking nothing to do with her.
I heard that after the trial, her family was just like, we don't want you. We don't care about you anymore. I actually heard that she moved in with her attorney's family.
Oh, really?
From the trial. Yeah. And that she was kind of like their foster child. And then once she became of age, she kind of like went off on her own.
Yeah.
And that her her family just kind of wants nothing to do with her. But then I saw in a YouTube video that in like 2003 or something, she sent a Christmas card to her grandma or something stupid. And then there was a funeral and she went, somebody in her family died and she went. And then they kind of like started to repatch.
Yeah.
So I don't know specifics, but yeah, I don't know if I would be cool with her, to be honest, if she were my sister.
So that sort of wraps up this whole vampire clan double murder Rod Farrell situation. I don't know. I kind of want to end this with saying that he's a giant fucking dickbag.
He is a dickbag.
And his face is ugly and I hate him.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily agree with all of the sentencing.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that for sure.
I think his sentencing of being a child and being sentenced to death was extremely severe.
Yeah, I don't think you should be able to sentence a child to, one, life in prison in general.
Yeah.
And also to the fucking death penalty.
Yeah.
Like, you are a child. And also, I don't think that being 16 years old, you should be able to be tried as an adult.
No, no.
Because here's my main reasoning. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you agree with me, but they fucking pull this shit all the time, dude. Like, a 13-year-old will be charged as an adult and shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't vote until you're 18. You can't fucking join the army until you're 18. You can't
drink until you're 21.
But you can fucking go to prison for life when you're 14 for killing someone?
Yeah, that's... Like, I don't agree with that.
Choose a fucking line, government, and stick to it. And I just hate that so fucking much.
Yeah, I'm happy that he's not out of prison because I don't think he's mentally capable.
No.
And I think that the time has passed for him to try to be.
Yeah.
So I don't think that him ever, like, coming back into society, I don't ever see that for him.
No, I don't think he can be reformed just based off of how he truly doesn't seem like he fucking cares at all.
Scott, I think, got the shit end of the deal.
Oh my God, he hurt.
We don't know if he knew about it. He says he didn't. Rod said he did. Rod lies about everything, though. So he also didn't do anything. Like, even though Rod says that he knew about the plan, Scott actually didn't kill anyone. And he was sentenced to life. So I'm happy that he's getting out, what is it? They said 40 years he's going to spend.
Yeah.
So he's getting out. He's going to be like an old man. He's, you know, I don't see him actively going on to do anything else.
I'm sure.
Charity and Dana, I think that's a crock of shit. I don't think that they... That is
17 and a half years.
I don't think that should have ever happened. I do think that Heather should have got... If any of the women in this situation had gotten sentenced, I think it should have been Heather.
Yes. I agree with you, but
she planted the seed. Who knows if she actually was like, yeah, Rod, do it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she just didn't get anything is just insane to me.
It's so wild, especially because the other girls were so severely punished.
If the other girls got jail time, then Heather should have too. It shouldn't have been Heather no, them yes. It should have been either all no or all yes.
I agree with that.
And they didn't even prosecute her.
No. They're like, oh, Heather,
she didn't even go up for a jury to be like, just, like, state your case. Like, she was just like, no.
Yeah, and, like, they were talking about earlier, or we were talking about earlier, the cops said that everyone looked, like, super high and unremorseful, which is a weird thing for the cops to say, but I feel like they probably said that after the fact, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And also, if you're surprised by cops, you're not going to, like, feel remorse, I guess. You're going to be like, what? Like, shocked and weird, and they probably were high.
100%.
Absolutely. But also, I do feel... Just to get on my little prison reform soapbox for one second.
Yes.
I think that prison should be a tool for reformation and not necessarily just for punishment. And I feel like all of the sentences here were given as punishment, not for reformation.
Especially for Scott.
Especially Scott and especially those girls.
Yeah.
And another question I have here is if you're trying to steal your parents' car...
Yeah.
And it's late at night. Aren't you just going to walk in and be like, hey, mom, hey, dad, and like grab the keys and like a fucking cheese stick and like stroll out?
That's the thing.
Why are you sending two boys in there with weapons?
That is the thing. That is the number one reason why I think that Heather was way more involved than Scott, than Charity, than Dana. I think she knew exactly what was going to happen. I think that if they wanted to take the car...
They could have just taken it.
She could have gotten up in the middle of the night and driven it out of the driveway and stolen everything.
Yeah.
The boys didn't need to be there. Nobody needed to come into her house.
Yeah. So I feel like...
She was there. Yeah. She was in the house. She could have left. She could have taken it. None of that needed to happen. There's a reason why they were there, and it's because she wanted her parents dead, in my opinion. I think that she knew what was happening, and I think that she's... part of the mastermind behind the entire thing.
This whole thing is insane to me.
Yeah.
And I guess the moral of the story is don't fucking kill people. Just be a cool vampire.
Yeah.
Don't be an aggressive vampire.
You can be a vampire. It's cool if you're a vampire.
It's so cool.
Just don't kill people.
No. Be like one of those vampires that wears like tons of like brocade and like velvet and shit. Like, I want, like, a textured fabric on a vampire. Do that. You know what I mean? Like, wear, like, some steampunk stuff if you want to do it. Mm. Like, talk with a cool accent.
Yes.
Be 900 years old. Just know when the Model T was invented. It's like, I support you. Yes. Just please, please, please don't fucking murder people. Yes.
We support vampires. We don't support murderers.
There it is. 2020. We just came out pro-vamp. Down with murder.
Exactly. It's that simple. It's that simple.
It's fucking simple.
All right. So now that we just have this heavy-ass story.
Yeah.
We have a listener mail.
Okay. Do have a listener mail that I'm very excited for. I'm going to tease it for one second. We have friends that have a fucking dope-ass YouTube channel called Aliens and Stuff.
Cool.
They're from England.
Ugh, you're automatically just better than us.
Well, their voices are for sure.
And their country.
America's like England Junior.
Well, current times.
Oh, my God. Everyone's better than us. Don't even... Come on. We are the Florida of the world right now. We are
the Florida of the world.
So we have a really, really very cool listener mail from Spencer from Aliens and Stuff. So we're going to save it for next week.
Yeah.
Super, super sorry, Spence. But we will read that then.
And we got you on next week.
In the meantime, check out their fucking amazing YouTube channel. It's called Aliens and Stuff. They just did a pretty fucking dope Skinwalker Ranch story.
Nice.
It's very good. Their accents are amazing. Nice. And if you wanted to know, Spencer is the one standing up with the laptop. So
in the video.
In the video. Yeah, just so you know. Okay. So yeah, we'll save that for next week.
If you guys want to do any of your own research, check out the source material we have provided in the description. Also, check out the Deadly Cults episode 1 documentary.
It's so good.
It's very good, and I'm going to continue with that season. But this has a lot of information on this, so if you like what you hear, listen to that or watch that, I guess. Don't watch the Vampire Clan movie.
It's bad. Don't do it. It's very bad. Unless you're in the mood for like the worst movie you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah. I don't know why you would be, but sure.
I don't know. Whatever, man. And then if you have any cool listener stories like Spencer, who we didn't get to yet, so sorry, send it in because we want to read some really, really spooky dukes for the spooky duke season.
Especially for Halloween, yeah. Mm-hmm. We would love to hear it. We've got merch.
We have so much merch.
You can find the link on our link tree. We have a book club.
We have a book club.
We're starting a book club.
Yeah. So
join our Facebook group so you can be in on that. It's going to start in November.
Yes, that's when the first meeting will be. We mm-hmm. will release some details hopefully by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
That should be out there. So if you have questions or anything, hit us up on any of the social medias. Or mm-hmm. you can email us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com. Contact us there for any and all reasons.
We also have a pretty sweet Halloween special coming out, so keep an eye out for that.
It's my favorite thing that's ever happened.
We did a little crossover with one of my favorite podcasts.
One of my favorite podcasts.
Slackjaw Punks.
They're so good.
I fucking love them, and I'm still like, I can't believe we talked to Bub.
I know. I was so excited. I'm fangirling a week later.
So we did like a little crossover with them. He's like a horror movie expert, so we kind of did a little favorite
dude
horror movie thing with him.
His horror movie knowledge is like insane. A fucking encyclopedia.
It's insane. It's
amazing. If you want to know anything about anything, listen to Slackjawed Punks.
Yeah. Follow them on Instagram too.
Yeah, they could use some love. And also, I just kind of want to plug our P.O. box.
Yes.
Because we've been getting some massive love for this. So as soon as we go pick up all the stuff, we will give some shout outs at the end of the show and I will tell everyone what we got. But if you want to send us some pretty cool stuff or maybe like a little cursed item or like if you want to like curse Nicole's family.
Here for it.
She'll love it.
I'm totally here for it.
If you want to send us like some stickies or like, I don't know, toenail clippings.
Yeah. We'll take those.
I don't know. We'll
hang
them up.
Some hair.
Yeah, whatever, man. Whatever you want.
Whatever you want. Send it to us.
Get fucking weird with it, honestly. You can send that.
Get so weird with it.
Get uncomfortable. Yes. We want to feel uncomfortable with the shit that you send us.
That's why we got a P.O. Box.
Yes. Send it to P.O. Box 1212 in Des Plaines, Illinois, 60017. And we did have someone ask last week. Yes, Des Plaines, Illinois is where Gacy was arrested.
Yes, it is.
So,
dude, we're still gonna do that episode.
One day.
Just gotta get all of our information
straight. We gotta do the things. Anyways.
Celebrate the strange.
And keep it unusual while you're at it.
Bye.